Hello, folks. Welcome to the Beyond the Resume podcast, brought to you by Jackson Lucas. My name is Chris Papa. Today, I spoke with Oad Porat. Oad is the Chief Investment Officer at Faro Point, a leading real estate investment firm focused on last-mile industrial properties and high-population growth markets. They're based in my town, Hoboken, New Jersey. Oad has a really interesting career, which started in Israel. He was part of the Israeli Air Force Reserves. And how did he get to the United States and invest into industrial properties? Find out in the podcast. Thank you. Oad, thanks for coming on the podcast, man. How was your day?
Thanks for having me.
So far, so good. How are you guys doing?
I'm good. So it's just me today. Lisa is not making it. She's a busy lady, Lisa Flicker, who is usually my co-host. We're usually recording on Fridays, but we're also busy that we moved this to a Tuesday. It's Tuesday, right? Yeah, it is Tuesday. And you're in...
Yeah, we tried to set it up.
Yeah. And you're in Hoboken, right? And so that's my town. I told you I lived there for a long time. How are things going in Hoboken?
We love Hoboken. I'm the one to blame why Fairborn is in Hoboken. I came here when I came from Israel 5 years ago. There's a large Israeli community in Hoboken. And that was the draw for me to kind of have me and my wife and the kid to have an easy kind of a get together with some folks that we know. And we've been here since. Since then, many folks have joined us. Our headquarters is now located in Hoboken, and probably have around 50 people.
Wow,
from Fairpoint sitting here. Yeah.
So yeah, you're yeah. So let's. Well, I didn't know there was a big Israeli community there. That's kind of cool. What part of town is it? Are you located in Hoboken?
Our offices are right on the water, on the southeast side. So downtown.
By the train station.
Right next to the path.
Yeah.
It makes a lot of sense because we draw people that are coming in from Brooklyn even. They commute daily or Upper East Side, Upper West Side, the Village for the young folks. And also people that are coming from the Jersey suburbs. We have all the people from Shore and Bergen County, Morristown, everywhere. It just makes it very easy to people in the area.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I lived there for a long time. I worked in Midtown and then lived in Hoboken, and it was just an easy commute. And I wish I worked in Hoboken. If I would have worked in Hoboken and lived in Hoboken, that would have been perfect, but oh well. So you're the CIO at Faro Point. Congratulations. That's a pretty big job. You guys are doing a ton of deals. I see your names, Faro Point, all over the place. I remember when you guys broke into the market. Not that long ago, right? I mean, yeah, kind of tell us about Faro Point and kind of like your history of the firm.
Sure. So Faro Point has been around for a little over 10 years. But when we started, it didn't look like what we're doing today. When we started, I was focusing only on a couple of Southeast markets, doing mostly retail office, kind of a small commercial real estate transactions. And later on, we discovered the industrial sector. And we've been focusing solely on industrial since around 2018, when we launched our first kind of a discretionary fund. And since then, we're doing only industrial, only, I would say, even light industrial or urban logistics, like we name it, which are warehouses that are typically below 200,000 square feet.
Gotcha. Yeah. So why? Yeah. I mean, so it's based out of Israel, right? Initially, and then you came over here. And what did you see? So you got into the light multi-tenant, light industrial stuff. You know, now it's pretty sexy. Everyone's getting into it. All this money's, this capital's flowing into it. They call it, you know, some of it iOS now. But you guys were doing that, like you said, way before. You know.
Yeah. It's a good point.
And I remember hearing about you guys, like, what are these guys investing? Like, it's all this really small industrial. And we have some clients that do that, you know, from way back in the day too. But I guess, kind of, what did you see in that space? Why did you pick that type of asset class?
I think that we were always trying to find an edge in the market. And at that time, with our cost of capital, finding an edge on large, I would say, marketed deals was not there. We couldn't compete with the big names out there. So we would have to be chasing. We had to chase small deals where we could find a little bit of an arbitrage call from where we can buy the deal and from where we can maybe sell it later as an aggregation. And we kind of took this this idea and developed it to our main fund vehicle structure that we're doing today. And basically, we're doing the same thing, just in a different scale since then. So I would say the typical business plan is to purchase small warehouses, urban warehouses between around the average of 70,000 square feet, close to urban centers, serving the local community. We find them typically on a one-by-one basis from estate, from just kind of a small investors, wherever the deal comes from, and then we aggregate them into large vehicles. And at scale, those vehicles are interesting for large institutions. On a five or a seven or $10 million deal, we'll typically not compete with the big funds out there. I will typically compete with a local investor or even a local owner that wants to own the warehouse. And there, I think that today we have an edge. With these guys, we can move faster, we can close faster, we underwrite, I think, with higher precision, and we have a full set of operations within the company. So once we aggregate that, I think we kind of bring the value through the aggregation phase. And that's what we were trying to do since the beginning. The aggregation back then was probably 5-10 warehouses. Today, our vehicles are north of 200. Assets that we're blending together between different markets. So kind of to go to your question there, we started to aggregate because we thought that's how we can bring an alpha to our investors, doing things that the typical our competitors will not necessarily do.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it was a very manpower intensive, right? Just, you know, going finding smaller deals. I think you guys self-managed, correct? Kind of do most things in-house.
It's true. So today we're fully vertically integrated. We do everything from sourcing through asset management, property management. We also do our construction in-house. We do accounting in-house. We raise our own funds. We're a one-stop shop for doing what we do. It's always been the case. I think we used to manage with third parties in the beginning, but we never did a JV with a partner. We always controlled our own deals. We find our own deals. Maybe we got some help in the beginning on the management, but we realized very early on that in order to be efficient in managing a 25,000 square feet tenant, or even less than that in some cases, you need to be present and you need to control the narrative of that conversation with the tenant. Sometimes through third parties, you don't get the full context of what was discussed and how the tenant is doing and their challenges. And I think that controlling the communication line between the customer, between the tenant and us as managers, enable us to be more efficient with how we approach those tenants on renewals or new leases in general. It just makes it all much better. So yeah, today we are doing all of that, and we're about 120 people in our company. We have an interesting tech component that we can talk
per. Yeah, yeah. I'm about the tech component.
Yeah, but other than that, we're traditional real estate in the outer part of that, and it is extensive. But before I'll touch the tech, again, I think that in order to be competitive on a $10 million deal in Baltimore or in Chicago, you need to be local because you need to know the local brokerage shops that are not necessarily the ones that are familiar to the New York family offices. These are street brokers that some of them are do leasing most of the time and they do one deal a year. So we're spending a lot of time and energy putting our acquisition folks in direct communication with those brokers. We identify them, we create relationships there, and we're able to get to deals ahead of I think many other people out there, and that's how we source some of what we have. And for the tech side, I think that that's something that part of our DNA, and it was like that since day one. We always knew that maybe it had to do with the fact that we're coming from Tel Aviv, which is a very strong tech capital in the world, actually. Mm-hmm. But maybe it's something else. I don't know. So we have a CTO, and some of the missions that we took upon ourselves to lead on with technology are developing our own softwares for procuring the deals, the pipeline management of how we do what we need to do. That's one side of the business, to really tailor-made it to the type of deals that we're doing in the capacity. And the other aspect of the tech, which is, I think, more sophisticated, is analytic, superior analytics through AI. We started to work on AI before ChatGPT was announced, so before it was cool. It takes a long time to develop those capabilities. But I think today we have a couple of products that are, in our opinion, giving us an edge in how we have precision in underwriting, and perhaps creating an alpha through underwriting with that technology.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like a very labor-intensive asset class, right? Like going out and finding, you know, the street brokers and like maybe the mom and pops and the off-market deals, and they're smaller deals. And if you can come up with it, now that you found there's a lot of capital flowing into that, you know, they found out, oh shit, like people are making good money off this. And so there's a lot of capital now going into this space. You have to find a different edge, right? And is that where kind of the AI has come in?
I think that we just wanted to be very good at what we do. And that's part of the DNA of the company, is to apply critical thinking on every step of the way. And part of that is, how can we do things better? How can we improve a process? How can we think of things in a way that we haven't thought about them before? So even regardless of what's positioning us as a company, we just always aspire to have this seeking alpha mentality of getting ahead of, you know, of some of the folks out there.
Gotcha. And then, like, what are the markets now? Like, I mean, are you finding new markets to get to break into? I know that you guys had a big, it's usually North Jersey, the traditional sort of traditional markets. Are you kind of breaking into smaller markets now? And are you finding, I'm sure you have to find your way into new markets and new ways to kind of outpace your competitors now that there's more competition.
There is more competition, and you touched on it a couple of times. When we started to address those smaller assets, we did have less institutional competition. Today, in some cases, we do compete with larger institutions on smaller deals, but it is labor intensive. And to do it in scale and to do it in a consistent way, I think that some of the larger institutions there are just not willing and wanting to spend the time and the effort to build that infrastructure. That infrastructure is pretty robust.
Yeah.
It makes sense economically only at scale. So I think we've built that, and it's ours to continue to develop that. In terms of the markets that we operate, we work on a local to regional basis. So we do have our regional offices and local presence in around 15 metros in the country. Mm. We are heavy on the east side, east coast more, and southeast. That's kind of where we started and how we sprawled across the United States. We're opening our LA office today. We're recording this today, and today we're actually, opening our LA office. We have two folks from our company. One is moving there and one was hired there. LA is a huge market for what we do for smaller industrial warehouses, and we are very excited to the amount of opportunity that we'll have there. But other than LA, we have an office in Chicago, regional office, one in Dallas, one in Philadelphia, one in Atlanta, one in Miami, and we have a small office in Memphis, Tennessee, where we started. And we think that's sufficient to cover pretty good substantial of the warehouse population, I would say, in the US.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, what's your background? Like, how did you get into real estate? Like, how did you get to be the CIO? Like, kind of take me through kind of your career journey.
So in Israel, I think that there's not a lot of expertise in commercial real estate, especially in the US. So when we started Adir, my partner, the CEO of the company, and myself, around 10 years ago, we're just kind of exploring and we're moving deal by deal, from residential houses to our first commercial deal, to our first industrial deal, to then industrial aggregation, to the funds that we have today. So I think that everything we figured out ourselves, everything we learned by ourselves, and we did have some good mentors along the way, but it was mostly kind of a trial and error, trying to perfect the game. So for example, we learned that in order to be effective in doing a small industrial deal, which is very competitive, we have to have discretionary capital. So we went and raised a fund. And then we realized that in order to be able to make a successful fund, we need to make it a value-add fund. So we needed to find some vacancies and try to make some elevated returns through that. So we kind of grew and developed those vehicles to what they are today. And today there are, I would say, pretty robust vehicles with hundreds of warehouses, with an intentional approach to how we compose those deals. Like, we have some in Chicago and some in Dallas. And why? Why do we have in Dallas and one in Chicago? Because they're maybe not correlated in terms of where the economy is impacting them or whatever the returns are. But without getting into those technicalities, my background is nothing of that really drives a real estate, I would say, traditional success. It's more, kind of a rolling the sleeves and doing deal after another and learning the business from our through the wall, basically. Fortunately for us, we're able to pick it up at one point, and I think now we're kind of good at what we do. But we also had the opportunity to hire a lot of great people into our teams that are knowledgeable and have the right experience and coming from diverse backgrounds, and this is what the makeup of Fairpoint today.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. It's a great story. Yeah, it's kind of trial and error at first, and just learning on the job. Well, that's a great story, man. But are you ready for the next part of the interview, which is called the hot seat? You might want to take off that zip up. You might want to take it off. It's going to get hot in here. Do you have
this? I can raise it up.
Yeah, but temperature controlled. Do you have a book and or podcast recommendation? You were mentioning some that in Israeli podcast, I believe, right?
Yeah. So someone sent me that's an Israeli one. I like the. There's a few real estate podcasts that I try to listen if I know the guy that's interviewing there. There's the Matthews founder. He has a podcast, Port Capital. Mm. Is a great guy, Chris Powers, and he has a good podcast there. Mm-hmm. There's one for CBRE that's good for real estate, I think. But there's also stuff that are more, I would say, broader. One of them, for example, is Founders podcast that kind of summarize a lot of very great books,
great business books
that are that we like. I don't have time for that. I wish I had, but those longer conversations that Alex Friedman has, I love them. If there's an interesting person that's kind of in there, but it's really hard to find a good three. I have three kids. I just had a baby, so
congratulations.
I don't know if I can listen to a lot of these. Thank you. In terms of book, let me just open my. I try to listen to that mostly, just kind of a time perspective. So let's see. Recently, the one with Elon Musk, that was a good one. Think Again by Adam Grant. What else? I like the Ray Dalio book. All of them. Charlie Munger. Recent book. Howard Marks. That's an old one, but that's a classic. The Market Cycles.
So you're always studying this stuff.
I like business book, typically. Yeah, I think that, at one point you learn that books can really teach you stuff. And I think that some of those books are really good for beginners book, I think. And then some of them, for example, to name a couple that I really like to recommend to young folks is Sam Zell book and Stephen Schwartzman book. These are good, I think, to kind of get yourself together. And then a more technical books like The Principles of Ray Dalio, The Cycles of Howard Marks. These are great books to listen to that are very practical, I would say.
That's awesome. And what about, like, what's your most memorable deal? Do you have a deal that you look back and say, wow, like that one just stands out at the top of the list? Or maybe the one where you learned.
We've done over 400 transactions in our company. In 21, 22, we did the most amount of industrial deals in the country. I think in terms of deals, we do a lot of them. I'm trying to think one that I led personally recently. It wasn't recent, but it was a while ago. We bought a Nike facility actually in Memphis. So that was a deal that we tried to do during COVID. Mm. Actually, there's a little bit of story there is that I had COVID. And my wife, that was the crazy times of COVID where nobody right. knew how long you're going to be able to come back and meet your family. And everybody thought they're going to just go to an island and wait there forever. So I had a bunch of time and I was able to, had more time because I didn't need to take care of my kid. I wasn't allowed to. So I was able to spend some time in kind of digging up some opportunities that we typically don't do, which are the small industrial transactions. And we've done a few outside of our box deals when they made sense. Uh-huh. And that was a deal that we bought straight from a developer during COVID without even going and traveling to see the asset.
Oh, really?
That was a hard one, but it was a very good one. From our history and kind of putting everything together from having our first, it was around a $50 million deal. So raising those funds for a deal specifically, another discretionary fund that was challenging because you need to raise money for a deal. You need to have a very good story, a very good business plan to show. And then putting it together in terms of the financing and due diligence and orchestrating all of that from locked in a room.
Right.
It was kind of a good way to spend the time. So that was a good deal to have.
Did you start to feel comfortable with like technology then? Like a little more comfortable with like, you know, seeing, you cannot see a deal and in person, and that's gotta be a big risk, a big fear, I guess.
We always have someone in our team that's putting eyes on the deal. But I think until we purchased 500 warehouses in Fairpoint's history. Right about like 500, maybe our last one was 501.
Uh-huh.
And probably in the first 200, I was physically in each and every one of them.
Right.
And so there was a point where it needed to be decentralized and other folks would go and see that. And it happened together with COVID. So we had local folks all the time and they would go and put eyes on a property. But for me, it was hard, you know, not to see those assets. But we kind of get used to it. And today we give a lot of discretion to our local teams, local regional market officers in underwriting those deals and conducting due diligence themselves.
Right.
And it's kind of a walking break without me seeing that at all.
Yeah. Eventually everyone's got to let go to grow, right? Let go of that control some a little bit. It's hard to do. You mentioned about having such a great team. What do you look for generally when you're hiring someone? Is there a certain type of personality or like what fits well there with you guys at Fairpoint?
It's a good one. I think that, you know, we try to look at it once we ask ourselves, what's the common denominator for the people that weren't very successful at Fairpoint?
Right.
But, every company has that. And we realized that there's a few principles or a few values that are out there that are important to us, and lacking them is something that's very apparent. I think it's really hard to see if someone has something, but it's easier maybe to see if it doesn't have it. So I think one that really comes to mind right now is critical thinking, and just being curious and being able to look at every problem from a multiple lens and multiple angle standpoint. I think that the folks that weren't successful sometimes lack some of that ability. And I think there's a reason, because our team, you mentioned that, you know, you need to let go once you grow. That's always been our motto to some extent. I think our platform is known by having a lot of discretion to people at the acquisition folks or market officers. And you can't have that without having the right team in place, without putting a person that knows what it doesn't know and knows what he knows very well. It's really hard to give this kind of a judgment to a person and to count on them. And I think that the things that I'm proud of the most of our team is that they're independent thinkers, but they understand the broader context of the company. And unfortunately, not everybody has that capacity, but we look for that. And it doesn't matter if you're a property manager or a market officer, you need to have that ability to challenge the status quo on every single thing that's happening. I'll give an example. For example, we just purchased an asset with a Fortune 50 tenant in Florida. And these folks there, the previous owner, they put portable HVAC system in those warehouses. And the tenants was paying for it. Let's say it was paying for like $1 million a year. And they've been doing it for 5 years. And we went there, and on day one, we realized that's not the most efficient way of doing things. And we're working to try to strike a deal with that tenant to convert this portable to a regular system for an increased rental rate and hence improving the value of the property. And making something there. And that type of value doesn't need to come from me. It needs to come from the local property manager. They need to see that, apply critical thinking. Should it be there? Can I do it differently? And drive the value. So if you don't have that at the end of like, and the people in the front or any person in the middle, you won't be able to really capture a value. Because I think sometimes in real estate, you make money on the buy. Yeah, for sure.
Right.
But a lot of times it's through hard work and consistent improvement and marginal improvement. You win by points. So you have to have the entire team, and you can control the outcomes. I can teach all the scenarios. I don't know them myself. I'm still learning.
Right.
So having the people that can teach themselves and drive the platform forward, I think that, so it's a long-winded way to say we appreciate independent thinkers. We think that that's a crucial trait to be successful is fair point.
It just emphasizes how important good property management is. And they're the people on the ground. They know what's going on in the market, right? So they can provide essential intel for acquisitions.
Yeah.
So last question, you mentioned you had some mentors along the way. Which mentors have had the most impact on you over the years?
I think that we have a few folks in out of Israel that are probably not familiar to the people that will listen to the podcast. Here in the US, we work closely with a guy named Glenn Raffano. Used to be the CEO of Cushman & Wakefield and REIT, and he's a good mentor for us, for me and for us at Fairpoint. Kind of navigating through some of the institutional expansion that we're having here in the US. That's a
good one. Yeah, I think I know him. But I think I might have met him before. Well, awesome, man. I appreciate it. Thanks for coming on the podcast. Fairpoint has been blowing up in a positive way over the last couple of years. I see your name everywhere, and it's been an incredible story and journey. And I wish you success throughout the rest of your career. So congratulations.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Appreciate the time.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Resume.
a Jackson Lucas podcast, where we take a deep dive into the career journeys of some of the top minds in real estate and equip you with the knowledge to move forward in your path towards the success you've envisioned. Make sure to like, share, and subscribe to Beyond the Resume. Be grateful for your support. All episodes of Beyond the Resume are brought to you by Jackson Lucas, building inclusive and diverse businesses through talent acquisition. Visit us at jacksonlucas.com.